Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are going to be covering season 4, episode 1, Gold Stick, and season 4, episode 2, The Balmoral Test.
Because it's all about the Balmoral Test.
Yeah.
Or so one would guess from this.
Because it is.
Because it really is. And so we are excited to be joining, hope you are joining us for season 4 of The Crown. And we will have spoilers for other seasons. If you haven't seen The Crown, you probably shouldn't be at season 4 on our podcast.
Unless
yet.
You're just that interested.
Yeah, because we're that great.
But in that case, thank you.
Yeah, because we love you. And so
we do appreciate everybody who listens.
Absolutely.
This is just a little fun thing we do, and we really enjoy doing it. So we appreciate anybody else who enjoys listening to us just talk about stuff we love or hate. And so
right.
Well, hate is a strong word. Dislike.
Curse about, because there will be cursing, in case you were wondering.
There's That's a great segue.
Yeah, exactly. So there's going to be cursing, and we also are having things to drink. What are you drinking?
I'm still having my ginger ale from the last episode. I was nursing it. I was going between that and water, even though they have this, they don't really have, they basically have the same effect on me. I don't know why. But yeah, I'm having my ginger ale, which I barely have put a dent in. So what are you having?
I am having, for in honor of the Balmoral test, scotch and coffee, because it is coffee time, and why not? So we'll put some scotch in it, because that is how
it's not dry January anymore.
No, and this is how you pass the Balmoral test, right? Is taking shots of scotch. Maybe
that'd be a nice test.
That would be an interesting
I think
test.
I'd fail that test, but
I'm pretty sure I would too. But yeah, I might fail the actual Balmoral test too, so
I think I'd be okay.
I could do better than some. Certainly.
Oh, absolutely. It's common sense.
Yeah, sometimes it's just common sense. So
but we're not starting with that.
No, we're not. We're starting with season 4, episode 1, Gold Stick, which opens with Elizabeth in military regalia about to ride out for the Tripping of the Colour.
My first note is, reminder, Elizabeth loves horses.
Well, I know. What I took away from this is that quite possibly, and we didn't see any of it in season 3, but Olivia Colman may have taken riding lessons.
Oh, she definitely did. Well, no, we did see some of that in season 3.
Did we?
Yeah, she was on horseback with Porchy.
I know. I don't remember seeing her on horseback. I remember.
No, she definitely was.
Okay. All right. But in any case,
it was the most boring part of the episode. That's probably why we skipped over it and didn't mention it at all.
Yeah, I didn't pay any attention to that at all. But the fact that, you know, she actually gets on horseback, and that's got to be fun. Like, if you have any kind of riding background, to, you know, be able to get in this full military regalia and
well,
whatever, that's really cool.
Well, here's a question. Do you have any riding background?
I do. Not much. I have family who has riding ability. And so I did take riding lessons a long time ago. I had friends who had horses when we lived in Colorado. And so we would go out riding a good bit, but that was Western. The lessons I took were English, doing jumping, that kind of thing, but I was not particularly good at it. My cousins, however, were very into it and actually competed in Olympic trials and things like that.
Damn, I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, so
which cousins?
Jane and Susie.
Oh shit, good
yeah.
fun.
So yeah, so they are very, very well versed and had horses, and you know, we would go out and go to the stables with them and that kind of thing. Not that I ever did anything there, it was rather embarrassing. But they were like way ahead of anything I was capable of doing. I probably could have done some things on a Western saddle that they were unfamiliar with, but I think they were far more knowledgeable about horses than I ever would be. But it's kind of cool to see that. And you did take some riding lessons at one point.
I did a summer camp. I think maybe 2 times, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was 2 summers in a row.
Yeah.
I remember my horse that I would be on, and it was, the name was Spot. I had a picture of me on Spot. Mm-hmm. It was framed and it had the word Spot on it. So not very imaginative of me. And of course he had spots. So, but okay. I didn't name him. Like,
no,
that was his
name.
He
was a painted pony.
Yeah, he was a sweetheart. I love Spot, but I only did that for 2 summers. And then I realized I'm not really good at this. And also I'm kind of scared. So
It was when I was younger. I was very definitely not scared, and especially not scared.
Okay, we get it. You're braver than I am.
Right, but jumping, I didn't realize that I wasn't good at it until I went with Jane and Susie, because they had real horses that were really trained, and I didn't know how to get the horse to do what it needed to
do. I was just trotting, but the only thing that was flashing in my mind whenever I was on that horse was that scene from Gone with the Wind. And so I never really wanted
Bonnie
to be
Blue Butler.
I never really wanted to be in that position.
Just like Paul.
No, yeah, anyway, moving on from that, then we go, oh yeah, there's the whole like ceremony, and mom's losing her shit right now, by the way. Then there's this whole thing while the ceremony's going on. You have the IRA talking about, oh, England sucks.
Right. And so Ireland's in rebellion. And at this point in time, the Irish Republic is not actually a thing. That the island itself is still almost exclusively under English rule.
Well, yeah, that's the reason why they're rebelling.
Right. And so
that's the whole point.
Right. And so the IRA, there's a voiceover of some IRA person on the radio, I guess, is what they're supposed to be talking about. They're going to spill more blood and so on and so forth. At the end of the Tripping of the Color, Charles leaves the balcony waving, and everybody else is like, hey.
I mean, that's just rude. I mean, dude, even if you have stuff to do, you should have probably planned for that in advance. Anyway, then
he gets in his car.
And he's driving somewhere, but we'll find out where in
a
second.
His car, I do love this, is British Racing Green. It's that almost black green. It's like he's got a British Racing Green cool car.
I'm not surprised. No. It's Charles. Anyway, we find out the family is having lunch, and they are discussing Charles's recent romantic endeavors and how he doesn't eat lunch anymore. Why? And then they're worried that Charles is still seeing Camilla, because of course he is.
Anna's like, yeah, that should still happen.
Well, yeah, she's not an idiot. Like, I mean, there's...
Well, right, and Camilla's married at this point.
And has children.
Yeah. We see more of that later.
But, yeah, we'll see more. Sadly. Then Philip basically blames Dickie for encouraging Charles to be with Camilla, because it is partly his fault. But it's also not all his fault, because Charles is still making stupid decisions.
Right. It's like, you know, Charles at this point is responsible for it. And of course, one of the things that we don't see as clearly in this is how old he is. I mean, they're still acting like he's
I have a note about that later on. We'll touch on that when we get there.
All right, fine.
Then he apparently, the newest girl is Sarah Spencer. I know the last name sounds familiar. It's not that one. Because seriously, like, no, when I was watching this season for the first time, I was just like, I knew Diana's first name. I didn't know her last name. So when it was just like, oh, it's Sarah Spencer, I'm like, who? And then you guys were like, are you kidding? Diana Spencer. I was like, oh, that one.
Yes. Yeah. Well, of course, we were alive during this whole courtship thing. And
I really didn't know that much about this whole Camilla, Charles, and Diana thing. So this, I was learning most of it through this and you telling me the actual stuff that was going on.
Go on.
In the stuff like that. But yeah, so he gets to to the Spencer's house, and Sarah leaves him alone for a minute. And then Diana, well, we don't know, you can deduce that it's Diana.
Though, that even at the lunch where Dickie and Anne are basically updating on Charles's love life, and they mentioned Sarah Spencer, like, there's this like chorus of approval, like, oh, well, that sounds good, like,
good family, know, good family,
yeah, good family, I like that idea, you know, she's clearly one of us, basically.
Yeah. So then Diana walks in a costume, and then she hides behind some flowers. I will say, I love this scene.
It's cute.
I really do. It's not necessarily only that it's cute. I like the way that they went about it, because obviously Diana is like the bombshell into this entire like thing. Like, she's going to be she's going to be a big player, especially in this season. As soon as they introduce her, it's going to be the Diana show, because that's a big part that was in the tabloids. There was a lot known and unknown, and they are going to play with that and all that stuff. So, and obviously they've really built up Charles as a character. So as soon as Diana comes into the mix, things are going to get messy, and they're going to try to focus as much on her as possible because they want to honor her
Right. They introduce her in this, you know, almost childlike way. It's very, you know, because she is dressed as, I don't know if she's dressed
She says that she's a tree, but that doesn't make any sense.
No, she is dressed as one of the fairy people from Midsommar.
As someone who has played two of the four fairies, well, sorry, seven fairies.
Woo!
Technically, there are seven, but the four non-important.
Non-Puck,
not Oberon, not Titania. Yeah. I will tell you
that would be Moth, Mustard Seed, Goblin,
and Peas Blossom.
Peas Blossom.
Yes. Well, I played Peas Blossom the first time I was in Midsommar. I've been in it twice, and I loved it the first time. The second time was under duress. Well, that's a weird way of putting it, but I wasn't like held hostage or anything. It was just, it wasn't the best in like situation. But the first time I did it, I was Philostrate, which is like the manservant, and I played Moth. Mm-hmm. And so that was a lot of fun. I have a lot of great memories from that. And it was actually the first Shakespeare show I did. And it was a great intro to that. And I know I'm going off on a tangent, but
it's okay. It's more fun.
But yeah, and then I played Moth and I played Peas Blossom. And the second time I did it, I was Peas Blossom and Starveling. I believe that was the name.
One of the players.
Yeah, because I played Moonshine.
Okay.
And so, that's Starveling, I believe. Okay.
But it's clear. I like this because, you know, she's being introduced very gently. They have this Shakespearean theater thing in common because we've seen that with Charles.
I wrote down she mentions they're doing Midsommar at her school, and I in parentheses put, now you're speaking my language. Yeah. And right. Same with Charles.
Right. And so the actress, and I will say this, and you have talked
about, I love Emma Corrin.
Right. I think you know, especially for someone who grew up during the period in which Diana was coming into her own, and that is my time frame. Because we saw her a lot. She was all over everything. She does a great imitation of her voice. I think the voice she does very, very well.
Her and Dr. Connor get the mannerisms down.
Yeah, like there are definitely mannerisms.
She definitely repeats the, well, okay, you can only do so much because, I mean, I think the whole thing, I remember, again, I watched interviews for whatever reason because I went down a rabbit hole. I remember I was talking about this in Goblet of Fire with me and Katie just going down rabbit holes of interviews with actors. But I did this and it was the same interview Josh O'Connor was talking about the mannerisms. Mm-hmm. And she was like, they had, and again, this is also something mentioned on a podcast we listen to with Dana Carvey and David Spade, mm-hmm. where they have like a lead-in word.
Yes.
To get into the accent, and so does Josh O'Connor, and so that was fun to listen to. But she was talking about how her audition process was a lot like Harrison Ford for Star Wars, where she was like reading as like a character to help with other auditions. Like she was reading as Diana for the Camilla auditions, and then they were just like, "Hey, she's great." So, and this was, it must have been like in season 3. Because they casted Camilla for season 3. So she's been in their minds. Right. And now they're just like, all right, you're Diana.
Right. And she's not.
And good for her.
She does do the mannerisms well. Her look is not
as pronounced. I don't love the haircuts, but still.
Well, I mean, the haircut, you know, it's not perfect, but, you know, Diana's haircut was, you know, 80s. Very,
well,
very
we act like every single one of these actors look like their characters to the T.
Right, don't. And they don't. They don't, and especially in these 2 seasons. I mean, how can you possibly pretend?
I'm personally willing to bend it for Emma Corrin to play Diana.
A willing suspension of disbelief.
I am absolutely willing to do that.
Go ahead.
I will, again, I love, they have great chemistry, and I think that they were very, regardless of like what situation they put Charles and Diana in, whether they're like the early days, like talking about Shakespeare and stuff they like, and her trying to charm him and all that stuff.
To refer to herself as a mad tree.
Yeah. And also like talking about, or they're arguing or something. They just have great chemistry. You can clearly see that the actors do.
Yeah.
And so I love that they got that right. And because you need that, regardless of if you like them together, obviously like you shouldn't, but like, but because you know how things end, but regardless, you can at least buy into the fact that, okay, he's interested in her.
Well, right.
There's a reason why he chose her.
Right. And he's enchanted in part because, first of all, she's beautiful, but also there's a mystery to her. Like, you know, she kind of runs off. She
has a mask on.
She sees him. She has a mask on. She's hiding behind things. There is more to be seen. Or at least he believes.
I like that the director tried to tease Diana. Yeah. Because that, again, it's a really smart choice.
Right. And you know, Sarah comes in and she's like, oh, you met my sister? She was just obsessed. With meeting you. And he's really?
I think
like,
that
someone's
was
obsessed with meeting me? Awesome.
Well, I think that was a good touch also because it proves that Diana wasn't just like wandering around and then randomly Charles is like, boom. But she was aware of him. She was aware of like she was curious about him
relationship,
she was interested and so it wasn't just all one-sided.
Yes,
I think that's important to understand,
right? Because again, you know, as things move on, you're kind of it is skewed rather differently in the media as things progress, but she is, you know,
they leave that gray and right. I kind of liked that,
right? Especially this, you know, and I agree this part of the season is well directed, this early part.
Absolutely.
And so Charles, he's a bit enchanted by the mystery. And she ducks her chin, like she even like looking out the window and watching them go off, she's still got like her little mask on.
She does that a lot.
She ducks her chin like Diana. And Diana
did that a lot too.
That shy Di look.
She does that. But I also wrote down, she watches them through the window. And I was like, she fits in right in with the family.
We stare out of windows at one another.
And then we go over to Margaret Thatcher.
All right. And I've got to say this. They cast Gillian Anderson in this role. And what I have written is just no. I mean, I know that Margaret Thatcher had weird speech patterns and she did. But to cast someone who is just, you know, she's very American. In this role,
I mean, they had John Lithgow do
right, and like I told you, John Lithgow was somebody
he did it.
He got it done, and you know, it was not as distracting to me as this. I feel like every time she's on screen, it's like, stop it, stop it, stop it.
Yeah, no, I mentioned before we started recording that there's the really big thing. Well, okay, it's big to me, but there's the one thing that I will constantly, and I will be consistent with this. That is the worst part for me is the way that Margaret talks.
Yeah.
I despise it. Yeah. It's the most condescending. It's like you're talking to a toddler, kind of slow and just, I hate it so much.
Part of her speech is, and it comes up later, there is a level of condescension involved.
She also sounds like she's dying.
And there's a slowness and a deliberate.
No, that sounds like Snape, but
Well,
I can't even imitate. I don't want to imitate it because it's so awful. I hate it so much. I'm not saying that the actress is horrible as an actress.
No.
I just hate the voice she puts on for this.
Right. And I understand, like I said, Thatcher herself.
Everything else about her is whatever, but I hate the way she talks.
Well, and then we have Philip complaining to Elizabeth about the idea of two women running the shop.
But also Elizabeth also is like impressed by her background of like she was a shop owner's like daughter.
And who was also an alderman.
Whatever. Right. And
I love this.
Went to Oxford and she built herself up.
Right. And so but I love this. Like she had applied for a job and didn't get it. And Philip like reads, I guess it's quoted in the papers about it, that, oh, well, she was rejected from that job for being headstrong, obstinate, and dangerously self-opinionated. And Elizabeth's response is, who else do we know that's like that? It's like, oh, well done. That was good. So Thatcher goes to the palace. She does this low curtsy to the point where her knee's on the ground.
No, seriously, it looks like she's lunging. Yeah. I have a note about that later. I didn't make the note now, but in the next episode she does it again and I'm just like, really?
Yeah,
you didn't learn?
Right. It's so funny. And of course she is the first female prime minister in
so we haven't Britain. Seen that.
Right, but she's the first ever. So she is setting the bar and she's really trying hard to do the superficial things correctly. And I think this is true of many women in power. It's like, look, I'm going to do what I am supposed to do and do it better. because if I do all of those things and they still bitch, then it's on them.
Okay. Right? Then Elizabeth says that she has fun predicting the prime minister's cabinet. And
oh
all that
my
stuff.
God. This is a conversation I just would never.
I have a quote. Women in general aren't suited for high office. They become too emotional. This is Margaret Thatcher talking. And I said, considering you are a woman in a high office talking to a woman in a high office, that might not have been the best thing to say. But, also, bullshit.
But Elizabeth,
fuck you.
Elizabeth's response like, well, I don't think you're going to have that problem with me.
Because
like, what are you saying?
And she's unemotional.
But Elizabeth, in her guesses, she's like, I don't expect there are going to be any women. But mostly because there aren't any to choose from.
She mentions, not that, like, regardless that there aren't any good candidates that are women in cabinet, that would be, like, suitable for cabinet in her eyes. There aren't any suitable candidates, but also she thinks women are too emotional when they're put in a high position. Again, you are so hypocritical.
Or is she? Because we get to see her, and the emotion is not really a Margaret Thatcher thing. And
she has
the nickname Iron Lady for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so the family is going to be going to Balmoral.
Oh,
and
no. There's I will say, I love Mr. Thatcher.
Oh, right.
Dennis, I love
He's
you.
Cute. He's cute.
He says when Margaret Thatcher is home, she's ironing because she's the Iron Lady, of course.
Right.
And so I just thought about that now. But she's ironing and she's like, oh yeah, she got most of the cabinet correct. She only got like one wrong and all that stuff. And then he says, two menopausal women should be a smooth ride.
And it's funny, but she also, one of the other things that Thatcher says, that, which is the exact opposite of what Jackie had said, well, she seemed very interested, very informed, and she has an appetite for work.
I appreciate that.
I do too. And I think Thatcher initially, first impression wise, appreciated it too.
Yeah.
But then we see the family going to Balmoral. And of course, the Windsors know how to have a little bit of fun or how to take time off as well. And Balmoral is their spot.
Yeah. Well, they're all in separate cars. And
it's
also
hilarious.
Yeah. No, you see Elizabeth and Philip together.
They hold hands.
And they're holding hands. It's cute because they're really excited to go to Balmoral. And then you.
Anne and Mark, her husband.
Apparently she's married. Now, you could have mentioned that.
They haven't even mentioned the fucking kidnap attempt that just, like, they ignored, but whatever.
That would have been a good part of an episode.
It would have, because this actress
is fabulous. I like Anne, so I want
to.
Well, again, also, I really would like to have gotten to know Mark more, because he was an Olympian.
They mentioned that later,
but it's just like, you could have had so much fun, because you're focusing so much on, like, obviously, Charles and Diana, it's more known and all that stuff, and you have to cover it.
Yeah.
But you could mention Anne and Mark.
You could mention fucking Andrew.
You don't have to mention Andrew, but you can mention Edward, I suppose. But, I broke down. Anne is married, apparently, and is arguing with her husband in the car. And then you also see the Queen Mother and Margaret just sleeping.
I know, it's so funny.
I love it so much.
It is hilarious. And so they get up to Balmoral, and we get to see Elizabeth riding. And again, I think this is Olivia Colman's riding episode. Like, you're like, oh, I'm going to ride. But Anne is supposed to go stalking with Elizabeth. And we find out that Anne she's been thrown from her horse, and she's been having trouble getting back in the saddle, more or less. And so she's like, and she's having a conversation with Philip, and they have a discussion about competition. And we find out, of course, that Anne's an Olympian, that they're super excited about, you know, the fact that, you know, it's very exciting that she could be, you know, in the Olympics. But she's like, I've lost the ability to ride and I've lost my identity.
But also she mentions that she is considering stopping competition, but also she doesn't want to be training with her husband.
Right. Because, and he's like, well, that's not the end of the world. You can make this work.
Yeah. I think the thing is, it's like, I can understand that mentality of like, I wouldn't want to compete against my husband, but also I wouldn't want to.
Oh, but they don't, because there's a women's thing.
Yeah, I know. But again, they would be in the same circuit. But I think that if you have a different process for training and you take it very, very seriously, and if they're conflicting training kind of ideas, you don't want that to affect
you. Yeah, that's
you.
True. That's true.
I think that's fair. I just wish that if they would expand on it more, if they were having marital problems. I'm assuming that's what they're like getting at.
Right, but they're usually beating us over the head with things, but they don't with this. So what?
Again, Anne gets nothing.
Right, but Anne mentions that she's scared, and Philip he gives her such a great pep talk, and he's like, "You are going to overcome this with Battenberg refusal to give in." And you know, he's talking about, of course, himself, his mother, you know, like
Anne was close with his mother. So.
Right. And of course, you know, she, God knows, she had to survive some shit. Oh, so, yes. And so did Philip. And it's like, you're going to do this. You are going to make this happen. We cut to Charles fly fishing in Iceland.
Yes. Anne and Elizabeth go stalking in Iceland. Charles is fly fishing and gets a call from Dickie. Charles is having a rendezvous with Camilla, and Dickie doesn't approve, but Charles calls out Dickie's marriage about being really bad and about like the marriage being horrible. And then Dickie is, it really doesn't go well. The conversation doesn't go well. And then he mentions that Andrew is cheating on Camilla. And I said, oh, big surprise. And she's cheating on him with you.
Shocker.
Jesus. He was just, because it's like a really, it's a throwaway thing. And
I didn't even catch it this time. I know I caught it the first time.
Well, he said, he's betting half of England or whatever. And I'm just like, bitch, please, you are betting his wife. So don't get started there. Like, I don't understand why that's that. Either way.
But he gets so angry. He's like, oh, you need to have us up there because, you know, you'll see how happy she makes me and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh my God, you people are just awful.
Yeah. And then he hangs up on Dickie, and then Dickie writes a letter to Charles.
His family's waiting. Like, they're supposed to go out and catch lobsters or pull up lobster traps or whatever. And Dickie's family is waiting for him. And again, this Charles Dance thing, one of the things I love about it, he shoots off this letter that is beautifully written, by the way.
We'll get to that.
But it's pages long, and he just knocks it out like it's nothing.
Yeah. Anyway, Dickie and his family, including like his grandson and all that stuff, go out lobster catching in Ireland. They're in Ireland. And the IRA bomb his boat. And he dies.
You make that very short.
It's a very long montage.
And it's intercut with different things.
It's intercut
with a lot of stuff.
Fine, I'll tell them. It's intercut with Charles fishing and then hitting a fish with a rock. Philip shooting pheasants.
We got all the blood sports going on here.
That's what I was going to mention. Philip is shooting pheasants, and Anne and Elizabeth are stalking and trying to...
But we've also got bad guys simultaneously stalking Dickie.
Yes, said IRA everyone guys. Killing something.
Yes.
It's symbolic. Again,
we get to see the IRA guys in their horrible 70s car, which I find hilarious.
Drive away.
But, you know, they are driving around. They want to make sure that they see it. Right. They want to confirm.
To be fair, if I were doing something like this, I'd want confirmation. I'm not going to be that like evil mustache twirling villain that doesn't check.
Right. But Dickie, and he's actually kind of sweet with, you know, his
not
grandson.
To say that I would ever do this.
No. He's sweet with his grandsons. And we've got like Elizabeth and Anne are climbing things, and they're all like doing these sporting white privilege-y kinds of things, I guess. It's so funny to me because, you know, everyone talks about they're all white privilege, whatever, but that kind of hunting, gathering mentality is very base level, right?
But they have servants helping them. So I don't, I can see why they still think it's white privilege-y. But also, I would like to point out, when I first watched this, again, season four, most of the events in season four were unknown to me. Mm-hmm. Actually, most of the events of The Crown were unknown to me before I watched it. Mm-hmm. But when I was watching it, watching this montage, I had no idea that the IRA bombed Dickie's boat.
Yeah, it was horrifying.
And so when I was watching it, I was like, is there a bomb on there? Like, I had no idea, but I was like, I could see where things were going. And when he started counting down, I'm like, there's a fucking bomb on there. And then I see it and I'm just like, wait, what? That happened? And then you guys told me about it. I was like, wow, they did a really good job of setting that up.
Right. Especially for people who are unfamiliar with any of it.
And yeah, so- no, I felt don't know. I felt smart for figuring it out.
Well, right. But also that this just, you know, it's incredibly sad, but you know, the whole like phone call prior with Dickie and Charles, again, you know, I've mentioned this before, Charles Dance and Josh O'Connor is a win.
I wish they had more scenes together. It was
really, really a lovely interchange. Not that they're happy with each other, but just the acting and the way
they don't even have to be in the same room.
No, they don't. It's really well done.
Well, but, okay, then the family told the news.
Right, but no, part of what Elizabeth does, though, is like she sees the Jeeps coming. She's like, oh, it's never good when there are a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, and then the family told the news, great acting from everyone, especially Josh O'Connor, who has that one scream that's kind of muffled at the end of the stream.
Yeah.
And then Charles is on the plane back to home to go to the funeral, and Charles reads the letter from Dickie.
Right, because it's delivered to him. It has already been sent by the time Dickie
is And there's this one quote that really stuck with me. It was like, you're not working hard enough to reach and to rise. And I was like, yes, bitch, you're not. Right.
This letter is like the kick in the pants that Charles should be getting. So Dickie says that Charles, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you can go ahead, but then I'll summarize it because I have a good note that summarizes
right, it. So Dickie says Charles is not even trying after David. You know that like David's love life is what fucked up the monarchy to begin with. And you've nothing, it created nothing but ruin and disappointment. And you need to find yourself a sweet, innocent, well-tempered girl who's young, who will know what the rules are and who people will love. And you need to do your duty and take, you know, that kind of life. And I miss you enormously. Love, Dickie, more or less.
Sure. This is what my synopsis was. The letter essentially says stop going after a married woman and to find someone else with a clean slate who will be loved as queen by Charles Dance. You will be missed. Then you see the prime minister answering the phone, and she takes off her earring to do so.
Now, this is such an 80s clip earring thing. My mother still has these giant Margaret Thatcher 80s clip earrings with pearls. I used to buy them for her back in the day as Christmas presents because they were such a rage. My mom has that short haircut.
You're an enabler, mother.
It was fashionable in the 80s because look.
Anyway,
and so Diana did that too, by the way.
Either way, the Prime Minister gives a political speech to Elizabeth over the phone.
Oh, no, I actually love this speech.
Well, either way, Elizabeth doesn't speak at all, and she's the one who called her.
Right, so Elizabeth calls the PM, and she says, like, we are going to go after the IRA. There's no such thing as political violence, just criminal violence. And I do agree with that sentiment. And she's like, we're going to show them no mercy. And I'm going to make sure that this just stops.
It just felt like she was talking to the press or a toddler because I just hate the way she talks.
I know her speech pattern is really annoying.
Either way, we go over to Philip and Charles.
This is such a weird interchange, but it's great.
It's weird, but I want to point out, I don't know why, but the very beginning of the scene really cracked me up because Philip is doing whatever and Charles comes into the room and then Philip notices and he's like, oh, it's you. And then Charles just goes, yes. It's like, and I just wrote grunting into the room because I don't know why.
Right. Because Philip pulls him in but you get the sense that Charles with his family is more or less monosyllabic other than Dickie.
Right. Yeah, well, he doesn't have Dickie anymore. But apparently Dickie left like 500 pages of instructions for the funeral box, which is very Dickie. So right. I do appreciate that.
Into the formality and the procedure and the this and the that. I love that even in death, he's reaching out from the grave kind
of
thing.
It makes sense. Charles will do the reading for it, which is a big thing because Philip wasn't given the honor. And then Philip basically gives a recap on his relationship with Dickie and how he basically became a father figure to him. But when Charles became the priority, he basically, like, Dickie replaced him.
Replaced
as a father figure for Charles, and Charles replaced Philip as a son, basically.
Right, and Philip's hurt. And I also want to say that he says it.
I do. He's pretty straightforward with this, and I do appreciate that. But there were a lot of close-ups in this scene when I think that you could have easily. I do appreciate it because it's great facial acting. But when
yeah, there's back weird to blocking going on here.
Again, I didn't need it to be quite so close up. Mm-hmm. I felt like you could have had like a good like master, which is just basically showing everything in the scene and everybody who's in the scene, and like just
think of a desk.
No, I think the fireplace works fine. It just, I think that like having that thing and having the symmetry of the two people on either side of the fireplace, clearly not on the same side, but he reaches across to pat him on the back and all that stuff about, hey, it's not your fault that you've replaced me. But it maybe, I'm sorry if it like created some resentment, but you are my son.
Well, right. But the way, again, there's like this bipolarness in either the directing or the writing. So,
well, I think so, it's kind of warranted here just because of grief.
Hang on. So I want to describe what happens. So Charles is like, well, look, you know, if you really want to read the readings, which is what Philip is getting at, it's like you've been designated as the person who's going to read the readings at the funeral. Like, and Philip, you can tell that Philip thought, well, I should be that person.
Or that he should have a major role.
Right. So Charles is kind of like, look, if you want to do it, you can do it. That's fine with me. I don't care. And Philip's like, that's irrelevant. This is what Dickie wanted. And we're here about what Dickie wanted.
Well, he also says his feelings are irrelevant, which is kind of similar to the season 2 argument with Elizabeth. Like, everything I think is irrelevant in this case because to take precedent.
No, I think this is different.
It's a different sentiment, but it's the same words. And I just appreciated how it's different now.
Right. He's accepting of it now.
Yeah, in a exactly. Way that he's grown. Wasn't
before. Right. He has grown into his role differently. Mm-hmm. And I do appreciate that. Essentially Philip's like, look, you're going to do this. They then have over the funeral, they have this narration of the IRA guy.
I will say the fade out on Philip going up the stairs, fading into the flag on the coffin is so jarring to me. Yeah, I don't
weird.
Know why.
There are several I hated weird that cut. In this season that are like cuts. Like,
I like the directing for the most part, like with the flower pot, Diana and Charles scene, but I didn't really like some of the decisions in this scene. So, and
that might be an editing decision rather than an actual, you know, whatever. But anyway,
there was a choice made that I didn't like. So.
Right. So the IRA speech is that they have made a legitimate blow against an enemy target. 13 were killed on Bloody Sunday, which is true. I mean, that happened.
Well, I mean, that's well documented.
Right, so. It's well documented.
They've taken 18, then, including Mountbatten.
Right.
Including an innocent child.
Right, exactly. Sure. They're not pointing out. You killed Mountbatten's grandchild and injured his other grandchild and his
family.
So, like, what the fuck is wrong with you
people? But again, the way that they're framing it is that they took innocence on our side. We took revenge and innocence on the other side. Right. They're so not pointing out the innocence. They're focusing on that button.
Right. But the deceased also, they also took out, I think it's 15 British soldiers on some point on the same day.
Yeah.
And so these bombings, and again, this is something that you are not familiar with, but IRA bombings were a thing. Even like the very first time I visited London, you had to be very careful going to like the financial district and that kind of stuff in London, because they were just like randomly bombing shit, like the underground and stuff like that. It was the kind of thing you had to be
very Guy Fawkes.
Well, right, but they also had a lot more security in places like the airport and stuff like that than we had ever seen here before 9/11. And of course, you've grown up post 9/11, so it's a very different world that you live in.
True.
they show Elizabeth, Charles, and Philip at different corners of the graveside for Dickie.
Mm-hmm. And I do like the transition. It's a very obvious transition to make, but like the covering with the dirt and all that mm-hmm. stuff is good. But yeah. It also made me think that should have been the end of the episode, but that's fine.
No.
We have to cover more, so that's fair. And then Anne is preparing for a competition.
And she's super nervous.
Yeah. And it's then so cute. And then she goes out onto, and we basically see the entire competition of like, well, her part of the competition anyway. Yes, and you see like Philip and Elizabeth cheering her on.
And Philip's actually shouting, which is not a royal thing. Oh my.
But he's excited. So good.
Yeah, it's sweet.
It's adorable.
Right.
And then Charles goes up to Elizabeth and Elizabeth's like, oh yeah, I felt like your father was just like hollering. He was making such a noise. And then he's just like, Charles is like, really?
Well, right. And you know, Elizabeth points out that, hey, you know, you need something to cheer him up after Dickie. And Charles is like, I'm so depressed about Dickie too. And he's leaving. And as he is leaving,
yeah, he's driving. Vehicle,
Diana is a pedestrian and she crosses in front of him and stops to offer condolences. Said, you know, he was brilliant at the funeral. They have a really nice chat.
Mm.
She mentions Sarah, but on the show, the age gap.
No, this is where I pointed it out because yeah. I wrote down the real age difference between the historical figures. I call them historical figures, but right. It's recent history, but still between the actual people is not as clear between the actors. So it makes you think it's fine.
Right.
Considering the fact that they got married and he was either 29 or 30 and she was 19 years old.
Right, but they meet when she's 18 years
old. Yeah, no, they mentioned that actually. Right, and I'm just kind of like, we were not okay with this when
right, the actual Snowden, actors are closer in age. So
and they look like it.
Yes.
But it's like, oh, it's fine. And also they have great chemistry. So what's the problem? There is a problem.
It's pretty major.
But
And I think part of what we're seeing, there's such reticence on the part of Charles as a character in this, you know, that he doesn't want, he's not sure about her or whatever. And the reticence in part in real life, I'm sure was, we don't have a lot in common. She's so much younger than me. Whereas on the show, it's like, well, you know, I'm still in love with Camilla kind of thing. And that,
I'm sure that betrayal.
Right, but it looks like a much bigger factor.
No, he mentions in the, well, we'll talk about it in the next episode, but he does mention the age. He says she's a child. And it's like, yeah. So, but
everyone's like,
either way, Charles
is good.
Whatever. Charles calls Sarah and won't be able to come to her wedding. So obviously that fell through. And
yeah, the whole hope of a relationship there.
Anyway, he asks about Diana. And apparently she helps at a kindergarten. She cleans for her sister. And she was called Dutch because she acted like she was destined for greater things. And her sister makes her, like, tries to make her look bad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, girl, you're getting married. Don't even start. Like, it doesn't matter. But, you know, don't pull a Camilla. Don't do this.
But here's the thing. I think Sarah feels a little hurt because, you know, things didn't work out with the Prince of Wales. And she's kind of like, and now he's interested in my sister, you know, like I can see, like, there's always a little sibling rivalry.
Oh, well, yeah, sure, but yeah, still,
you can see it. I can see it.
I can see it. I just think it's stupid. But
it's stupid. She helps at a canary. She cleans my house. Oh my god, you know.
I'm sorry. Whatever. Did I put you off? And he wasn't. And then he plans to ask Diana out. He calls her and her roommate answers the phone. It really is kind of funny.
Right. She's listening to Blondie's Call Me.
Yeah. Well, perfect.
Call me.
Great. And then he goes to the Spencer's house and they go on a date. And it's mentioned she just turned 18 and he's about 29 or 28 or something. There is something wrong there.
Yes.
It's brushed past. Because it kind of was in like history in general. Like, it's like, oh, well, Diana and Charles were married. It's like, oh yeah, she was 19 and he was like 30. So.
Well, no, at the time, you know, and you talk about it historically, I was there, you know, I was alive then, watched the whole thing on TV when they got married. It was portrayed as this big romance.
Well, yeah, that's going to be part of it later.
Right. And it's just this fairy tale. Oh my gosh, she's kind of
like the Kennedys.
From obscurity. And she's just this lovely fairy princess person,
and we are here to debunk that.
The crowd is
definitely to debunk that. But yes. Okay, that's the end of the episode. Best part.
Oh gosh, I put a note to write them, and I didn't write them. Mom. So best part, I would say.
Do you want me to go first?
Yes.
Okay. Elizabeth showing off her intelligence with the like prime minister selection of cabinet and stuff. I appreciated that. It was acknowledged that she's intelligent. I like that Margaret appreciated that. Diana's introduction, I like.
I
like that a lot. And then amazing acting from everybody, especially Josh O'Connor and Tobias Menzies. I think that they had, they're great. They had a great scene together. And also everyone's reaction to the death is really well done.
Yeah. And I would say Josh O'Connor and any of the guys like Tobias Menzies and with Charles Dance, I think those interactions.
Bros.
Well, not bros. They're very different than not bros, but I love those interactions. They are beautifully acted. And again, you know, it's hard to give enough props to Josh O'Connor in this role. I think
he's too fantastic. Honestly,
he's really very.
I think he got the Golden Globe for this,
and he should absolutely have, deserved absolutely. It. And you know,
and Emma Corrin got it for Diana. So
right,
good for
Emma
her.
Corrin got for Diana, but I think that some of that, and I'm very critical, is more of the world is obsessed with Diana.
And, well, I mean, of course that's true, but I honestly, I think she's a great actress. So
I think she did a good job with this role. She did get the voice, she got the head ducking. I don't think that this performance is much more than that. I don't think the writing is much more than that.
I fundamentally disagree with part of it.
We're going to see more as things progress, and so it's fine.
There's one scene in particular that I will point out when we get there. That I think secured the bag for both Josh O'Connor and Emma Corrin for awards that she paid off.
We will get to that. But again, I think we see a broader spectrum of Josh O'Connor's acting chops with this, because he is happy, he's sad, he's in love, he's tormented, he does all of these things.
Because he has other shit going on other than his relationship with Diana. Diana right. just has Charles, mm-hmm. and obviously like all of her like plot lines are going to be associated with that. And right. so it's just going to be a wave of misery always because she's just unhappy.
Right, but I think that the...
There are some shining moments as far as like happiness are concerned.
And we're going to get to all of that. But right now, I feel like Josh O'Connor's performance is excellent. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, those interactions with the guys, excellent.
The squad.
I'm not calling them the squad.
You don't have to.
Good, thanks. I feel like the writing is still, you know, we're going to episode 1, season 4, and it's uneven. And you can see it still, and it's kind of like shit. But I do like the introduction of Diana, how it's done.
That I love that.
Two steps in, two steps back.
Again, if they ever bring up really Shakespeare, lovely. I'm going to probably be in. So it's like, they immediately,
so
like, they got to,
like, your brother was Nazis. Oh, look, they're Nazis.
Oh my God, don't say that.
Oh, look, they're Shakespeare.
Either way, I think that it was pretty easy to suck me in. And I think they did well with that.
I'm going to say this too about the Shakespeare. I feel like that theatrical connection that Charles and Diana clearly had at that point is very underplayed as things progress.
What?
And I feel like that's, and it may have been underplayed in their marriage. I don't know, but it's kind of
sad. There's a moment where theater comes back.
Theater does come back in the relationship, but it's not.
Because it's so dramatic. But I think not just that, but I will say I do love, again, whenever they implement Shakespeare into it, like they've done it 3 times from what I recall. They did it with the two-faced guy talking about the Merchant of Venice, mm-hmm. doing that quote. The truth will out stuff, and then obviously with Richard II, and it was very appropriate there. They brought it back with Midsommar, and the whole thing of like it seems very appropriate because he went into the woods with Sarah, came out of the woods with a completely different person. Hey. Demetrius is a bit of a dick, so I think it works.
I like that. I didn't really catch that. That's very good.
And she's the fairy who puts the magic in his eye. And puts the charm on, and it just works. I think, again, whenever they implement Shakespeare, I'm all for it, and they usually implement it well and with
when
a lot
they
of
do
subtext,
it, which is not
never time. Again.
Yes.
So not I appreciate it while I can. What about your worst parts?
Gillian Anderson is Margaret Thatcher. I just fucking hate this performance, and it's in like every episode of the season. So there's going to be a negative in pretty much every episode of this season. I feel like and there's a lot in upcoming episodes, so I feel like her performance, while Margaret Thatcher I'm sure was very stilted and all of the things, different strange, and they may certainly highlight that. The performance is just, there's zero reason to empathize with her in any way. It's like the inhuman Elizabeth, which I don't like. We've got inhuman Margaret Thatcher, which I don't like. Yeah.
Well, my worst parts are Margaret Thatcher's voice. It's always going to be a worst part. You better get used to it. Yeah. Margaret Thatcher insulting women. I do not appreciate that. And which is not going to be the last time that she does this. So not looking forward to that. And Charles is still seeing Camilla. I do not like that.
Oh yeah, the Charles and Camilla thing.
It gets worse.
It gets worse. I don't think there is a point where I'm okay with it.
Never.
Ever, even when they're married.
Until he gets divorced, both of them are divorced, I'm not okay with their marriage.
Right, I'm not.
And even then, at that point, you've already destroyed many lives along the way. Is it really worth it now? Destroyed
my faith in them as a couple, right? I mean, there's an argument, that they've overcome all these obstacles, but there's also an argument of, like, this is a seriously dysfunctional, fucked up relationship.
Well, it's always going to be true.
Right.
What was your overall grade?
My overall grade for this episode, I would give it, like, a B.
Okay. I gave it an A-.
Of course you did, because you love McCormick.
Well, and that's not only it. I love Josh O'Connor, too. But that's not it, either. I just think that it was
good... I just gave a thumbs up to a screen that you're never going to see.
Yeah, great job. But I think that it was mostly because... I will admit, I do prefer season 4 to season 3. That's...
Yeah, I'm finding that's probably true for me, too, but I am...
It just feels more interesting to me. Yeah. There are fewer places that lag, and where they do, I'll point them out. But I just think that there's more interesting stuff going on, even if it's messy, and it is absolutely is messy.
Okay,
but it's dealing with a messy time in everyone's like life as a royal. Everyone's like dealing with messy shit, so everyone's in the same boat, and everyone's sinking. But I kind of appreciate it because. It's done interestingly and it's a little bit less wishy-washy about
people. It's got a point of view. It does. It's got a point of view.
It makes a statement and it stands by it regardless of if it's a good statement.
Well, right. It's a point of view about specific members of the royal family and it's very
focused. They stand by their decision of how to characterize certain characters at this point.
Well, right.
It takes them a while to get there, but I think they've made a decision.
Right. But the other part of it, the season 3 to me lost its way in part because it did an okay job of portraying external events, like events outside of the royal family, but completely made up shit about the royal family's response to those events.
Yeah.
And very obviously did so. I think that this, and again, I think they're probably making up a fair bit.
Oh, sure.
But I think some of this royal family drama itself
was well
documented. I mean, Dickie Mountbatten getting blown up.
How is that going to affect people? Obviously, people closest to him.
You see Charles giving the readings at the funeral. Just all of those things are well documented. So when they have things that they can latch onto, I think that the writers do a lot better than when they're just extrapolating.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
all right, anyway, so we're going to move on to season 4, episode 2, the Balmoral Test.
The Balmoral Test, which involves, it doesn't involve whiskey. Wait, no.
It doesn't, but it does it for you.
It could. So
anyway, there's a special stag. Especially with
reindeer.
No, it's a special stag that has wandered onto Balmoral grounds after being shot.
Right, it's shot by a Japanese tourist on other ground. The stag itself is like a 14 point.
It's an
imperial grand stag. Yes. I love this interchange between Anne and Philip about the stag. It is hilarious.
Well, the prime minister and her husband will be coming to Balmoral, and everyone at Balmoral, it's the family basically, except for Charles, who's doing whatever the fuck he's doing. And fucking Camilla. Everyone is excited about the Imperial Stag, especially Philip and Anne. And they're
just like, I'm gonna get it. No, I'm gonna
because
get it.
Because they want to mount it on the wall and all that stuff, because there's one already mounted, but they want to put another one on the wall, and Anne wants to be the one to do it, but Philip wants to do it first, all that stuff. Then you see Charles and Diana at the opera on a date, but their grandmother.
Pathetic date. It's so
well, her
sad.
Grandmother's in the middle. Like that. Like they're going to be. And I wrote down really stirs the loins. Like, come on. If you're gonna have somebody like cock blocking you the entire time, like,
you could have someone attractive, right? But no.
Well, no. Regardless, like, don't have somebody. Like, you can have someone sitting behind them and them sit next to each other. Yeah. But she's literally sitting in the middle.
Well, right. But again, you know, there's also they are done with the opera. You know, Charles is taking his leave of Diana, and he's talking about, oh, my summer show, amazing. I'm going to Zimbabwe, then I'm going to go to Scotland. And the chaperone is watching, and Charles shakes Diana's hand, but Diana's like the whole time like encouraging him, you could do more than that, she's not gonna care, it's gonna be fine,
she's a snob, don't worry about it, my grandmother's a snob, don't worry about it.
But yeah. Charles seems very reluctant, very unsure, and I think the truth is that he's not sexually attracted to her,
not yet,
at least not as portrayed here.
Not yet.
PM wants to bring, you know, she has a meeting.
I also want to say I love her dress in that scene. I really like her.
Oh, Diana's?
Yeah.
It's cute, doesn't fit her very well.
Well, it's 80,
green,
it's 70s,
green, teal, like, taffeta, you know, whatever. Yeah. I had taffeta dresses back in the day too.
We see another like shot of the stag struggling. It's clearly CGI. It's sad. But yeah, then the prime minister is introducing large spending cuts to the cabinet.
$4 billion in spending cuts, which $4 billion spending cuts, and like the cabinet's like, fuck no, we're conservative, we don't cut that much, that's too much at one time.
It's a lot at one time.
It is a lot,
but it would be beneficial though,
right? But what she says is we need to bring public borrowing and spending under control, and there's no other way to do it. If we don't do it now, we're never going to do it. This piecemeal thing never is going to actually happen. And I love the way she describes them to her husband. I love it actually. Because what she says is these men are so patronizing. They're unimaginative. I mean, they don't bring anything to the table about how to fix the problems. And they are so wet. And
again,
so,
they say wet again. I don't know if they like
the thing. We Googled it.
Did you? So,
yes, you probably did, actually.
Good
because
job,
I was complaining
God.
About it, too. Because, you know, obviously we'd heard Anne use the term wet with...
Yeah, no, I said, hey,
Andrew
writers,
Parker
why?
Andrew Parker Bowles. Apparently this is a British term. So it means weak, inept, and ineffectual.
Oh, okay.
And particularly in the political context, it became any opposition to Margaret Thatcher. Was referred to that way.
Okay.
So now it makes sense. So
the prime minister's husband mentions the Balmoral tests to determine if the guest is in or out. Very mean girls. But prime minister and her husband are expected to sleep in separate rooms, tip at the end of the stay, and unpack, and to like, they're not expected to unpack the bags. And apparently that's the wife's job. Really? You're doing a lot for feminism, Margaret. Thank you. Jesus Christ.
Well, okay. And I recognize your complaints here, but one of the other things she says is God needs no faint hearts and ambassadors his ambassadors. And she's like, that's how she feels about her cabinet. But the Balmoral test, there's also like a protocol sheet that they didn't even bother to bring.
Again, whenever you were going to even like be near the royal family, if they give you a protocol sheet, you better
fucking read it, you fucking morons.
You
it's like
you're
supposed to be so smart, right?
You also seem to be like
caring superior.
She seemed to be very interested in protocol when she was doing her lunging. I don't know why she isn't now. It makes no sense. But again, the maid tells them, hey, there's a protocol sheet. You don't tip until the end of the stay and all that stuff. And I also love Dennis in this scene, her husband being like, oh, it's British money. You can spend it in Scotland.
God, it's hilarious.
No, but he's just making a joke because he's funny. I just...
Right, but he also is kind of like trying to tell the PM, oh, you need to be nice to these people. And she's like, I don't have time to be nice, which... But the maid points out you didn't bring any outdoor shoes. It's like, you're going to fucking Scotland.
With the hunting
what
family.
What on earth are you thinking? I would know as an American. Americans sitting here. You need to bring outdoor shoes.
It comes back later to haunt her. The family comes back from stalking in regular clothes.
They're all fucking dirty.
Yeah, and the prime minister and her husband are in black tie for dinner already. Okay, it says on the protocol sheet, it's drinks before dinner at 6.
Yeah.
But it should have been specified as tea.
Well, right, and they're also pointing, but there's also, like, dinner at 8. Like, you're going to spend 2 hours in fucking black tie? Yeah, that's what I was saying.
It's like, you
have never heard of Downton Abbey, people? Come on.
You live in England.
You live in England, you know.
We know what to do.
We know what to do. We pass the Balmoral test for dinner, people. This is how it works.
Anyway, Anne and Mark make stag sounds at dinner.
It's hilarious.
It's great.
Oh, Mark does it better.
Whoa. Again, I wish we saw more Anne and Mark. I want to root for them as a couple, but I know how things end. But at the same time, I'm just like,
I mean, at least you see them having an interaction.
And you see them like in the background talking to each other, and I'm just like, I want to hear what they're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. I want
some banter. I'm interested in
when they go into dinner.
Also, Mark's kind of cute, so I want the best for her.
Right. So there are bagpipes when they come into dinner. They discuss, and you can see how horrified both Margaret Thatcher and her husband are in this discussion at dinner. Like, the Queen Mother's talking about, you know, like killing stags. People think that it's like cruel and whatever, but it's actually conservation. And they talk about all of these elements.
They're not doing well in the conversation.
No, but both Margaret Thatcher and her husband are completely lost.
Anyway,
have a conversation.
Then after dinner, they play a game of dibble dibble or whatever it's called. Count counts as Helena Bonham Carter scene 6. I'm going to count it. It's like spoken rhyme stuff, but I'm still going to count it. Anyway, and they play it, and then it gets to the prime minister, and she just fails. She's like, one ibble dibble to calling number 8
10.
Or 10 ibble dibble with 7 ibble dibble ibbles. Right. And she's in the worst stilted way, and it's so bad.
Right. So the game, basically, and you can pick it up pretty quickly when you're sitting here looking at it, is that people have to say this dibble ibble stuff to each other. And if you get it wrong,
you put ash on your face.
Yeah, there's a cork that's dipped in ash, and you put the ash on your face, and each little spot is considered an ibble dibble, whatever.
Dibble ibble. Anyway, the prime minister fails the game, and her monotone, because by being her monotone self.
And they're like, what was that? That was terrible. It was horrible.
The prime minister, then that night, prime minister doesn't want her husband to sleep in different rooms, so he reads the history of Balmoral while the prime minister works, after wasting her night, apparently. And she's going to be going stalking with Elizabeth the next day.
Right.
So,
but she's giving no thought to it. And so she's working. But she says, like, those that sleep apart grow apart, blah, blah, blah.
Whatever.
She has no proper clothes. She's got this bright blue coat. She has,
is the next day when she's
like
going stalking.
Like, her heels on. Oh, my God, are you fucking kidding me? You don't have any, like, practical walking shoes. I'm sorry. That's, like, horse shit. No, again, this is just fucking bullshit. She rides out with the queen to where they're going to start looking for.
They talk about how the prime minister worked with her father, and the prime minister also decides to eventually decide, even though like she borrows like outside shoes, she's just struggling. And so she decides to go back and change, and everyone is relieved.
because she's, you know, the color and the scent and the everything, she doesn't get it.
And then Margaret, Princess Margaret, is meeting the family for lunch, and then catches the prime minister working in Queen Victoria's chair.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, who just does that shit?
Well, there is all, yeah, also, it's not your house. Be aware of that. But also,
yeah, you're a fucking guest.
But there's also this one part of the interaction that really cracks me up, and it's, I beg your pardon. And she's like, don't say that either. Say what?
She
says, begging for something is desperate. And apparently it's a bank holiday, and tells her to take time off. And apparently taking time off gives her no pleasure. But it, and then she's like, but it could give perspective.
That's Margaret's.
That's Margaret. Yes. Other Margaret.
And she's right. She's absolutely right.
Good Margaret says that. And right. then Charles arrives at Balmoral and wants Camilla to come up too, but she's a wife and a mother.
Yeah, it's like, this is the first time I've heard of her being a mother. It's like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. But Charles says,
not that it stopped her before.
And you're like, oh my God, what is wrong with these people? But Camilla tells Charles, like, you need to finally, you know, like, give in, whatever, and you need a girl that's going to be available. Tell me about this Diana person.
Bring her to Balmoral,
it's not helpful for me to be jealous. I don't want to be jealous. And he's like, okay, whatever. So he calls,
back to your fucking family.
Right. So he calls Diana, and this is what Camilla tells him, like, ring Diana and say, come up to Scotland.
I've been thinking about you, blah, blah, blah. Bullshit, basically.
Right. And this is my note. Charles hangs up on Camilla. And my note is, move the fuck on, dude. She's telling you.
And she is a mother and a wife.
Yeah.
Leave her alone. Well, okay. She needs to leave him alone, too. But
Yes.
But, she needs to cut him off as well.
Well, right. But here's the other thing. Like, he's the Prince of Wales. If he calls you, you're kind of a vassal and whatever.
Well, she needs to make it even more clear.
How much more clear can you be than you need to get this?
Stop having sex with him. That's how you make it more clear.
That's true.
Okay. Anyway.
So the PM is causing.
Sorry.
Unemployment. And we hear that on the news, and they're at the Scottish Games, and she's such a fucking
sad. I was gonna say the Prime Minister's cabinet is speaking out against her and her inexperience on the television, and yeah. Margaret Prime Minister sees it. I'm just gonna do it like that because
I'm not gonna call her the PM at this point.
Yeah, me too. Then they go to the Scottish Games from Brave, and she's complaining about being there, and then she says, I'm struggling to find any redeeming qualities in these people at all. And I was like, I was gonna say the same thing about you, bitch.
Well, right. I mean, she's just like, oh, they're so common. I mean, that's basically
grateful that you were invited to Balmoral in the first place,
much like Lyndon Johnson, right? Like, you come on,
us Americans are so dumb, but apparently some British people are so dumb
too, because you don't even know you change for dinner. What the fuck, you fucking
well, they knew
idiot.
That, but they did it too early because they did 2 hours early. Come on, there's a dressing gong.
It's ridiculous.
Fuck you. Anyway,
and as Philip had pointed out in that sequence, she doesn't even know how to have fun, does she?
She doesn't. And she doesn't get it. She just have not. Fun. Relax.
Yeah.
And then she has a stick up her ass the entire time, and I hate her so much. Right. Then the Prime Minister leaves Balmoral the next morning, and then Margaret and Elizabeth are talking.
I love what she says at the game. She's like, all these people are boorish, snobbish, rude, and need fundamental change. She's referring to the royals.
You
it's
need
like,
to
are
calm
you?
Down.
Yeah, look in the mirror, girl.
What are you going to accomplish? What are you expecting to accomplish with your cabinet? Because you don't. It's not just like you have the power to only to do everything without cabinet approval or parliament approval.
Right.
So nothing's going to happen to drastically change the fundamental like British government.
Right.
You
well,
like,
I mean, but
what
she does make some sweeping changes. So whatever, we
I
see
hate
that.
Her.
Anyway,
I'm sorry if I'm yelling. I'm just really upset.
It's okay. So.
She leaves Balmoral the next morning, and then and Margaret and Elizabeth are talking, and Margaret's like, I'm incredibly friendly. I positively gushed.
It's like,
I
no,
love that so much.
No. I'm not self-aware either.
I said, I love this evolution of Margaret. Then Diana comes to Balmoral, and her grandmother tells her how important this is. At least she understands how important this is. Apparently Margaret Thatcher doesn't.
Well, right. But again, the grandmother understands, and Diana's like, oh, it's just a weekend.
I think
but Diana knows what a country weekend is.
Well, she knows what it is, but she also understands the gravity of everything and like how important things are, but she wants to treat it like a regular weekend because that's what they would be expecting.
Well, right, and that she doesn't want to stress herself out either.
Yeah, no,
so
she needs to
calm down. It's basically a sink or swim situation. She knows it.
Yeah, the family is assessing Diana at dinner.
I gotta see this. They have these interspersed shots of the stag in a full moon in the woods.
Oh, I know, that happens after.
It says the family is assessing
Diana at dinner, and then there's a shot of the stag howls at the moon. He's a werestag. That's what I wrote down.
Philip asks Diana to go stalking with him in the morning. It's 5:30 in the morning. She gets wakened, and the maid
asks
are like,
if she
you're going.
Well, the maid asks if she needs outdoor shoes, and then she was just like, oh, those, I only brought outdoor shoes. And like, you know what to do, but also you went to dinner, so obviously you don't only have outdoor shoes.
Right, right. But she also, Diana, like when she's going out with Philip, she's like, oh, I'm just a country girl at heart, which is a lie.
Well, yeah, okay.
But,
I mean,
but yeah, whatever.
And then they get to know Diana.
Right, and they talk about how she lived in the cottage at Sandringham, which apparently was where the Spencers lived.
Yeah, when she mentions she's a country girl, I was like, she knows how to play the game, yes, and impress people.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that they mentioned, they show that, because it literally, that comment contradicts exactly what happened, what discussions later on. And I like that they show that.
Yeah.
Anyway, then there's a really cute scene with Diana and Philip stalking and stuff, because she's,
yeah, no, this she's is actually really well done.
I love this
sequence is really quite good. And again, I think I give more credit to Tobias Menzies here, but I feel like she does handle it well.
No, I think she does great. But I also, I would like to mention, again, in the interview I listened to from both Josh O'Connor and Emma Corrin, she was looking at the scene and she was like, my allergies were going insane with all of this heather and all of this stuff. Like, her like entire face was like red and she was just like struggling. And so whenever I watch the scene now, I just am thinking about, oh my God, I can only imagine.
I had no idea.
Because I saw her nose, and I was like, yeah, that's a bit red. So
I didn't even notice. So
again,
you know, they're bonding. Some of these shots are way too long, in my opinion.
But okay, then Diana helps get the shot on the stag by pointing out the wind was fighting him on the left.
Yeah.
And they bring the stag back, everyone's impressed, and Philip clearly approves.
And then Charles, I was like, sees it.
No, and I also said, were they out all day? They left at 5:30 in the morning and it's sundown now. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but then there's like weird edits. Like, you edit to the sun in the woods, this and this there and that there. It's like, what the fuck? I mean, there are different times of day.
Well, apparently, they mentioned,
it's like, oh, stop it.
They mentioned it took 4 hours to find the stag. So
No, not while they're out. I don't mind the
where stag bothers you. I agree.
No. It's the weirdness. After they've killed the stag, there's a bunch of weird cuts to nature that are like different times a day and out of sequence. And you're kind of like, what? Did you mean to do that? Because I think you
didn't. I don't know. Anyway, Diana leaves and Charles will get the reports to her and says she's been a great sport. And I said, how romantic.
Yeah, I mean, he's
very awkward.
Romantic courtship ever. I mean, it's really sad. He made much more of an effort with Camilla.
Obviously he did, because he was interested. But I think, not to say he isn't like interested in Diana, it's just different. And he's not putting as much effort in because he's not as passionate about this. But also, when I will point out, like at this point, now that we're talking about how unromantic everything is, I found it so funny when they were leaving the opera and she was like, oh, I do love this opera. And she's like, oh, it's just so romantic. And then he was just like, actually, you're forgetting the political ramifications of the playwright. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, Charles.
Yeah, it's like,
way to ruin a moment.
Yeah, but he's definitely not, that's what I mean though, is that he's just not, you know, I don't know, he's not that guy. Anyway, so we've got, he calls Camilla and it's like, oh, she got rave reviews. Everybody's a triumph. She passed with flying colors. And Camilla's kind of like, oh.
And also Philip basically told Charles to marry Diana while the stag was being skinned. And he was like, the symbolism was not lost on me.
Oh, vomit.
And then she says, she's a child. And I wrote, you're right.
Yes.
Then Elizabeth watches through a window, naturally. I don't know who she watches. I think Charles. I don't know.
I love this next sequence. Not actually. I think this goes on way too long. But the PM arms herself with battle with earrings and a pen.
I wrote this down. They are obsessed with Margaret Thatcher's hair and earrings because they always show her preparing herself in the mirror. Did not do this for any other person.
How much did they spend on earrings in a week for her? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Moving on, she fires her mutinous cabinet members.
I will say this, the office where she does this, and I mentioned this to your daddy, I really, really wanted the picture where Fudge shows up as the other minister.
Jesus Christ.
That would have made me so happy. Because the rest of this is horseshit.
Moving on. Then again, the Prime Minister's curtsy to Elizabeth looks like she's doing lunges. And then we see also she like has a whole meeting with Elizabeth and all whatever. Mm-hmm. And Anne still calls Charles Eeyore. Like she
right, but that's after.
So I know. I didn't have any notes, so I just
did. So Elizabeth like says, "Oh, people are mystified by Balmoral because they are all upset by these blood sports, but we've had blood sports here. And, you know, the PM is, you know, your actions have been kind of bloody." And she's kind of like, "Oh, you know, these people lacked grit." And this is Elizabeth's response. Assuming privilege and entitlement lack grit is a mistake, and you can create a lot of enemies. And the PM's like, "I'm okay with having enemies." She's like, are you really?
Let's see
how that actually plays out. All right, so yes, you're right. Charles and Anne comes in. Oh, hey, Eeyore.
Yeah, Charles wants to get to know Diana more because they really don't know each other. And then Anne's like, "You'll have time for that later." He's like, "That's what everyone keeps saying, but I really want to get to know her more before I get to like marry her. Probably a good idea, and probably not what Charles said." Yeah. But anyway.
But Anne says that she's perfect in age, looks, and breeding. And like he even mentions that Camilla's for it. And Anne's like, "It's time to close that chapter. You need to move the fuck on." She says, "Don't fight it. She's perfect. She's got the damn stag. Damn her. She must be written in the stars."
Yeah. And then I love their sibling dynamic. And then we see the new cabinet with younger people, and they take a picture, all that stuff.
And it's juxtaposed with mounting the stag head, like mounting Charles's head on the wall.
And also, yeah, that's it. And then and then you see Diana get bombarded with paparazzi.
Yep. And that's the episode. Yay.
Best part?
Best parts to me.
Did you write them down?
I didn't.
I'll do it first then.
Okay.
Diana, I really do like how she plays the game, and I like that they show that she plays the game. And that she's not just an innocent and everything. The games that they play, like with the Ibble Dibble stuff, like that, I love that. The family dynamics, I love.
I like the family
dynamics. I love seeing everybody like work together, like seeing Anne and Margaret talk, and seeing
Anne and Margaret and
Elizabeth and all that, and Anne and Philip and stuff like that. Yeah, Margaret is also a very big, Princess Margaret is a very big best part for me because she's just so funny in this episode.
Yeah,
Anne and Philip, and Anne's like interactions with both Philip and Charles and all that stuff. What about you?
I mostly had, you know, I agree with you, the fact that Diana knows the rules, even and I think that is very important to me in my criticism of her character later.
Mm-hmm.
The family dynamics, I do love, and you know, I love like sibling and whatever dynamics, but the family dynamics here I think are great. I do like some of the vistas that we get to see.
Yeah.
I think that's really very good. But you know, that's pretty much it. What's your worst part?
I'm sorry, I was swallowing my ginger ale. Margaret Thatcher's voice. I told you it's gonna be the worst part every single time. Camilla being a part of anything, especially since she's a mother, fuck her. Don't fuck her, Charles. Charles half-assing his way through everything because of Camilla.
Yeah.
Those are my worst parts.
My worst part is the PM's snobbishness and hypocrisy.
It's kind of built in with Margaret Thatcher's voice, right, that I just hate like, her behavior.
She's so superior, and she's criticizing people for being superior. It's like, come on.
Yeah, Margaret Thatcher in general, this episode sucks.
Yeah. How'd you grade this episode?
A minus as well, because I really, I like this episode a lot. I don't know if I'd give it an A, though, but I really love this.
I can give it B plus A minus. And I think that the reason for that is
family dynamics, I think, is a big part of it.
But, I think it is a well-structured episode in many respects. It's a Balmoral test for more than one person. But it's the same test.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it is very well structured. The parallels make sense.
The stag, where stag.
Yeah, just the where stag, all howling that. At the moon. Yeah, because Charles is howling at Camilla. So there we go.
He's howling at something. And he needs to stop.
Yeah, so we are going to be proceeding in season 4. We are excited for you to join us. We hope that you do. And
cheers.